Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
That was very robotic of you.
Thank you.
In this episode, we are covering off, it's Ireland versus New Zealand.
It is, for our anniversary episode.
Yeah, which episode is it?
80.
80. It's 80 episodes, folks.
It's 3 years of It Takes Two.
2010's Boy and 2021's Belfast. Is it 21?
So it's 23. So it's more recent than 21.
Nope, 2021.
Oh, was it? Wow.
Yeah.
I felt like it was more recent than that. Okay. Yep, those are the movies. Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to do, it's a fun episode, and also it's, the anniversary of when we started doing our episodes, and I thought it'd be fun to do an Ireland versus New Zealand kind of episode.
And for those who don't know, I'm from New Zealand.
And I'm from Ireland.
Yeah. Shocker. Not from Northern Ireland.
I'm not from Northern Ireland. Yeah, it is. Belfast is a Northern Ireland. It is a movie kind of about the Troubles, without being directly about the Troubles.
But hopefully, one day, Ireland will be united.
I mean, it's 2024 right now.
Yeah, and in the Star Trek timeline, the unification of Ireland was 2024. You can do it, Ireland.
Anyway. So these are both movies by... They're both, written and directed by actors who have kind of dipped into their childhoods without necessarily making it actually about their childhoods, and shown you what it's like to be a child with a lot of imagination who is fueled by imagination and by the media they consume, and optimism in a time where their reality is not so positive and juggling with the optimism and the brightness of childhood with stuff going on that is basically that they have to deal with all this negative stuff. That sentence really got away from me.
Yeah, it's fine. mine do that all the time. So,
you know what I'm saying.
Starting off, Belfast is obviously set in Belfast.
Mm-hmm.
It's mainly related to the conflicts between Protestants and Catholics and the era that it's set in. What?
It is. This in particular is, they do boil it down to Protestants and Catholics.
Yeah, and it's also about the economic crisis that was happening.
Yeah.
And the fact there were very little jobs and a lot of people... Shockingly, it's almost like this is topical. People were using differences to divide everybody, mm-hmm. and using it as an excuse to commit violence, to commit hate crimes based on something that is completely irrelevant, because if both of the people were in the same room together, locked in there to have a conversation with each other, it turns out everybody's pretty bloody similar,
mm-hmm.
and they need to shut up and get along. At the time of this recording, there's a lot of bad shit happening in the world. I could have said that at any point in time, because there's always bad shit happening in the world.
True. Yeah, there's a lot going on right now.
I just feel like it's front and center of stage at the moment. There's a lot of angry, sad people in the world causing division.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's basically the takeaway of Belfast, realistically. It's a Protestant, the main characters are a Protestant family.
Yeah.
And the Catholic families are run out of the neighborhood simply for the fact they're Catholic. And everybody knows everybody, and that's one of the main takeaways from the movie, is just like everybody knows everybody. And I think that's a really huge difference. I bring it up quite regularly when I'm talking to people, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows their neighbours anymore. And I think that's probably just our generation in general. Because I think it's very, very different maybe it's different worlds, but like, I don't feel like it was completely different. It was very endearing to me when I was in Ireland.
Mm.
And how close you were, your family are to your neighbours.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, definitely living in a city here, I don't feel like I know my neighbours.
Yeah.
And I could say that's because we're in an apartment block, but when I've lived in houses in Wellington, yeah. I felt the same. I didn't know my neighbours. But very much in Dublin, I did.
Yeah. And maybe there are 1,000 reasons why you don't say hello to everybody. But I think, you know, we should really, everybody should make an effort to be nice to just a random person every day. Because it's just, yeah, there's a lot of, you don't know the pain somebody else is going through. And I think that's one of the other big takeaways from Belfast. But I think we've spoken enough about that for the second. Boy, on the other hand, very similar, as you said, with the imagination part, because Boy Alamein, who is the son of a criminal and a wannabe gang leader, and you know, his obviously spoilers, because this entire podcast is spoilers. His mother has passed away at the birth of his younger brother.
That's, the way they show that is so sad. It's just like, because it's all like, everything's like sunshine and rainbows, and you know, this kid is so happy about everything, and then yeah. There's just like this cutaway scene to like his memory of seeing just like her legs covered in blood with people crying.
Yeah.
And it's just like, whoa, just like all of a sudden out of nowhere in that movie. It's very, just a moment of reality.
And
it really hits.
Yeah, Buddy, who is the main boy in Belfast.
Yeah, you got Buddy and Boy.
Buddy and Boy. His fear of leaving, even though they have a so much more prosperous life in England, where his father is working in like management, and they'll get a house and all this, because he works in construction, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, the mum and the family's terrified of leaving. Everybody she knows, and there's like a lot of family holding them with the grandparents and stuff.
In both movies, there's a lot of extended family. Yeah. And that's something that I, you know, I've talked about with people here in terms of things that I see similar between our Irish people and Maori people.
Yeah.
It's one of, I mean, there is a weird amount of similarities, yeah. I feel like, but one of them is the role
oppressed by the British.
One of them is the role that extended family take in your life.
Yeah,
like you see in Belfast, Buddy is being, you know, he picked up from school by his cousin, and he goes to his grandparents' house and spends time with them. They have there's a whole like barbecue they have at one point with all of his cousins and his aunties and uncles and things. You know, and it's very much like, it's the kind of, it takes a village to raise a kid motto, but also with like actual extended family. And I know the joke people will make and that you'd like to make is, oh, you know, bloody Catholics, it's all Catholic Ireland. That's why the Irish are like that, because there's huge families. But this is very explicitly about a Protestant family.
Yeah.
So it's not that. It's very much just a part of our culture that you are very involved with extended family.
Yeah.
I didn't know my dad's family growing up, and that was really unusual.
Yeah.
Like, people thought it was strange that I didn't have, or didn't know all the cousins that I had. But then I was very close with the ones I didn't know.
Yeah,
like, you've met, you know, one of my cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've met aunties and uncles of mine. Because it's very much just how Irish families are. And I think you see that in Boy as well, that he's, you know, he's being raised by his grandmother. And he's kind of, well, she's away at a tangi whana. He's looking after his his cousins and his and because he's the eldest, being 11.
Yeah.
So he's expected to cook the dinners and things, and you know,
microwave the doorknobs.
Yeah, microwave the doorknobs. Yeah. So he's looking after his little brother and all of his cousins, and they all are in this house, and you know, and then also, you get the auntie who has all the jobs in town, and you know, it's definitely, again, everyone in the village knows each other, and everyone is to some extent looking after each other, but also very much this idea of extended family being really close.
It's definitely the tone of the movie is definitely different. Mm. Buddy is very center focused, and you get a lot of like him trying to get close to a girl at school he likes, and you know, just dealing with like the drama and not understanding what was going on, as a child would.
Yep.
And Boy, on the other hand, basically lived for the first sort of, I'd say until about third act, is living in this weird fantasy where his father is basically the ideal of God.
Yeah.
And he has made up all these stories about his father to basically deify him. And the reality comes crashing down to him at basically the turning point of the movie. And you really see, like, his entire world have to be shattered for him to grow.
Yeah.
Because he is trapped in this weird, like, oh, my dad is a literally, you know, it's this, you know, when he introduces his father, he talks about him being a master carver, a deep sea diver, you know, can dance like Michael Jackson, all this, like, you know, fought off soldiers by doing a haka, like, out of the trenches and all this stuff. And it's very much like this very weird, even this, like, even the scenes where he's met his father and he's still, like, not realizing how much of a piece of shit he is.
He also kind of covers it up because it is very much about, and it's something that like Boy and Buddy have in common, is its vast imagination.
Yeah.
And it's in Boy, it's very much like when his dad is there, he's covering up for the stuff.
Yeah.
And you do get that moment, and it's back to the, you know, the stuff around the mother dying, that he, you know, has been telling his little brother, you know, oh, dad had to go do this, and, you know, you have these powers, and that's why this happened, and, blah, blah, blah. But then you get this moment where he cracks, and he's like, you weren't there, and I don't remember you being there.
Yeah.
Where did you go? And it's, and it's the crack in the facade where you go, like, oh, he has known. He's known this whole time that his dad was like this.
Yeah.
And he's created this alternate version where he has this really cool dad who just happens to not be there.
Yeah.
And then it's him struggling with still telling people that his dad is cool while they can see that he's not. You know, in the moment where he's like bought the ice pops for all the kids, and his dad rocks up and he goes over to be all cool, and he just gets
smacked in the face. Yeah.
And you know, he doesn't know how to react to that because he's like, well, I've just like, you know, I've built up to these guys that you're this really cool person, and that I'm really cool, and now they're seeing this reality.
It's interesting because, like, it's not hard to realize, because his father's also named Alamein.
Mm-hmm.
To realize, it's played by Taika Waititi. Why his character, the father character in the story, is the way he is as well.
Yeah.
Because he had, like, the perfect life where he had his beautiful son and his beautiful, you know, partner, and then they were having a second child, and, you know, she died, and then he didn't know what to do with himself. Yeah,
and the other implication is that they're very young. You see photos, look like teenagers when Boy was born, when Alamein was born. So, like, they're a very young couple, and then she dies clearly quite traumatically in childbirth. It's, you know, there's a lot of blood from even just the split second we see of it.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that would be horrible to deal with.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not a not a pleasant memory to have.
No.
And I think that's another reason he left, because, like, I can't remember, there's another quote, and I can't remember what it was. I can't remember what movie it's from.
Hmm.
Talking about not being able to look at his own children. Oh, no, that's fucking Rain Over Me.
Right.
Yeah, talking about the fact that he can't look at his own, like, because he just sees his wife and children who died in 9/11.
Right.
But it's very much like that. I think he's, like, running away from literally everything.
Yeah, and that's the breakdown, is that, like, you know, you have... There's an implication that, you know, boy has built up to Rocky that, like, oh, yeah, dad was around when you were young and you don't remember it.
Yeah.
Because Rocky is saying, do you think he remembers me? And he's like, oh, of course he remembers you, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you get that moment, you realize that he's never even looked at him.
Yeah.
Until he rocked up... You know, when Rocky is, what, 7 or 8?
Yeah.
Or 6 maybe at the youngest. He's never even seen that kid before.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it must be so difficult for him to even look at him. But also, like, he should have stayed. Yeah, he should have looked after his kids. In Belfast. So the kind of equivalent in Belfast is... That you very much, like, it's Buddy's parents, I think, really try to keep him grounded and shielded from what's going on. And they have Catholic friends, and he's in an integrated school. He's in a school where he's, you know, there's Protestant and Catholic children, and he's segregated to one or the other. I mean, I went to Catholic schools where they didn't let non-Catholics in. You know, it is a thing in Ireland, I can tell you that much. But, yeah, so they very much have tried to keep him grounded in reality, and not let this, you know, everything that's going on affect him. But you get, like, moments where it's him and his sister talking, or him and his, cousin talking, and... You know, they're trying to figure out how can you tell if someone's a Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, you could tell by their name if they're named after a saint, you know, this. And then they're like, but we've got a cousin named that. And they're like, what? But he's Protestant, you know. And it's a whole thing that, like, they're trying to figure out how can you tell so that you don't mingle with them, because you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Even though that's clearly not how he was raised, but he's getting it from
yeah.
the influence around him. But even, like, you know... That she kind of talks him into looting and shoplifting when people are doing things like that, and he does it, like, for the thrill of it, doesn't understand what he's doing. And then you get the moment where, you know, these guys who his dad has been kind of warning him about suddenly are, like, holding him and his mum hostage, essentially, in this, and everything is starting to explode, and you just go, like, oh, you know, you can see him realize, like, oh, this is real and we're going to get hurt here. And it's that dawning reality of, like, you know, you've been trying to balance just, like, I'm just a kid who hangs out with his you know, his nana and his pop. And, you know, I've got a crush on the Catholic girl at school. And I'm just trying to get good at math so I can sit next to her and stuff like that. And then it's like, there's literal war happening on my street.
Yeah.
And trying to come to terms with that. And it's, you know, even, you know, like you discussed, that they don't want to leave. And his mom has really... You know, she brings up an interesting point, which is, you know, that they, coming from, like, working class Belfast, moving to, you know, mainland UK.
Yeah, they're going to be outcasts.
And also, what she says to the father is that people won't understand us.
Yeah.
They won't even know what we're saying. It's like, we'll be away from our family, we'll be away from all the people that we know and love, and also... You know, and we'll be outcasts, and we'll be, you know, whatever. But even above all that, like, people won't even be able to communicate with us.
Yeah.
And so it's a really hard decision that they have to make, because that's, you know, they don't want to stay in the fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, you know, they don't have options for money here. And, like, the dad, I know he's not gone for 7 years, whatever, like Alamein is in Boy, but he's... gone for weeks at a time because he's working in England and he can't afford to travel home more often than 3 weeks or whatever.
And it's very interesting too, because the Their main money issue comes from the fact they got audited and had to pay back taxes.
Right.
And it feels just like an ongoing control thing.
Yeah.
That.
Why, the British in Ireland? How could it be?
There was no, yeah.
Sorry.
But there was, yeah, no, what? It's not even, well, yes. Most of Ireland is British free now.
Not Belfast.
Not Belfast. Not I feel Belfast. Sorry for you, Wales.
What? Wales?
Yeah. They'll never be free to British. True. Because it's where all the rich British people retire.
What do you mean? Wales is part of Great Britain.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
So the Welsh people, technically speaking, are British.
All right. Well, I wouldn't tell a Welsh person that.
I think you mean the English people retire there.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it makes sense to say British people retire to Britain.
True. So English people retire to Wales, and that's why Wales will never have a referendum like Scotland did, even though it didn't work. There's a weird geopolitical issue when there's like the border
Scottish
of
Scottish thing. I mean, listen, I think Brexit. Scotland would have, if Brexit had happened first, I think Scotland would have voted yes.
Yeah, because it was just been a giant clusterfuck.
Well, no, because the reasons that a lot of people gave for voting not to split from the UK was because they didn't want to split from the EU.
Yeah.
And then Scotland voted stay in the EU, but.
And then Brexit happened.
Yeah. So Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales all majority voted stay in the EU.
Yeah.
And the English went, no, and then complained that they can't watch BBC from Spain.
Yeah.
But anyway, of course,
British folks count for two.
English
folks count for two. Damn redcoats. With your muskets and your East India Trading Company. I don't know where I'm going. It's very, yeah, like you said earlier in the podcast, it's very interesting the similarities. Because you do get this, you get that sort of, what's the word? What's a nice way of putting it? Downtrodden seems too, like Lady and the Trampy, you know, chimney sweep, you know,
right.
penny for a, you know, whatever.
Mm.
It's this whole concept of, you know, Alamein, the man, the father Alamein's behavior was probably very self-destructive, and that's why he got in trouble.
Yeah.
He was looking for somebody. He was looking for someone to rely on, and that's why, you know, this whole gang life. Not that it's a real, like, the fact that it's Taika Waititi, the fact that it's Kiwi humor, it's a very, like, drama / black comedy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it is not as cut and dry as maybe we're describing it if you haven't seen the movie. There is a lot of comedy in it.
I think in both.
Yeah.
I think both have comedy elements.
I think it's... Boy has more, like... witty, sketchy, like, you know, improv-y sort of comedy, you know, sub-reality comedy, where I think Belfast is very funny.
Yeah.
In its own very dry, sort of, you have to laugh or you're crying kind of mentality. And
I also think the child actors in both movies have great comedic acting.
Yeah.
I know that, like, for a large part, these are kind of dramas, but, yeah. Like, the kids are fantastic, both of them.
I would agree.
Our boy, James Rolleston.
Yeah.
And I forgot the other kid's name. I know it's Jude something, isn't he? Or because I know there was, like, a joke that people didn't know whether they were talking to him or Judy Dench on set when they tried to call them.
Yeah.
My internet's just gone as I tried to double
check. Why is your internet gone? What's happened to your internet?
Jude Hill. Yeah, Jude Hill. So Jude Hill and James Rolleston, who is, I've seen him in a couple of things now, I think, but, like, when I see his face, I think of him in The Breaker Uppers.
Yeah.
Where he, there's a character, he's just plays, like, a himbo, basically.
Yeah.
And he's, like, his love interest is a girl named Mel, and he keeps being like, oh, is it short for melon? And it's just, like, so funny to me. It's like, oh, melon.
There's been some great New Zealand hits and some really weird, really weird movies.
Yeah.
You know, Taika, you know, despite how I feel about him now,
I would love his art.
Yeah.
I do love his work.
He's gotten famous. He got way too famous way too quickly.
I think, unfortunately, his character in Free Guy feels like a parody of himself.
Yeah.
I think he can be very funny. I think he's obviously got a lot of writing chops.
Yeah.
And he does great work as a detector. He's a detector. Director. A director. I think, like, there's a lot of his movies that I really love, but I don't think I would get on with him in person.
Yeah.
He's seems to be very extroverted, and I think quite, I feel like saying egocentric is too rude of a way to put it, but definitely a person who has a lot of self-esteem and self-worth.
Yeah.
And being an Irish person for whom, like, self-deprecation is the norm.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't sit well with my sensibilities. But also, you know, he's done some great jobs, so he's probably got all the right to be as confident as he is. So,
yeah.
You know.
It's how I feel the opposite about M. Night Shyamalan, who's just sort of had his star moment, had where everyone was writing was the next Steven Spielberg, and then just made garbage. Yeah. And I don't understand who the fuck keeps giving him money. Like, that's the thing that blows my mind. Who keeps giving that guy money?
I don't know.
It's like, yeah. Oh, you made a really good movie in, like, the early 2000s.
Mm.
Let's just, like, let you ruin franchises and make the most weird premise movies. Oh, spoilers for a bunch of M. Night Shyamalan movies. You're stuck in an elevator and one of the people is the devil, okay? Oh, the plants are coming to kill us.
You went on this rant like 2 episodes ago.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh my god, time is circular. The fascists are back.
Gotta get into it.
It just annoys the shit out of me. Anyway. But yeah, like, at least his art is good. Like, despite his...
Taika Waititi.
Yeah. Free Guy was fun. Did he act in it? I don't remember.
Yeah, no, he didn't write or direct Free Guy.
Just the fact that his character did feel like him a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
His
character was, like, a parody of a certain type of person, but, like, I think Taika Waititi is that kind person. Of person.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, then again, maybe that is the self-deprecating humor. To me. So, I don't know.
Back to the movies. Yes. The movies we're talking about.
I like that they both, in both of them, like, the main character doesn't really have, a proper name.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Buddy's name is Buddy.
Is it?
I think so. I think, because that's what everyone refers to him as. I think his name is supposed to be Buddy. Whereas Boy, his name is Alamein, but, like, almost exclusively he's referred to as Boy in the movie. And there is something about that, like, that these guys are writing, you know, drawing from their childhood, but not actually writing autobiographically. I think Belfast is more close to being autobiographical than Boy is.
Oh, wow. Okay. So just to, like, his parents' name are Ma, and, like, the characters' names are Ma, Pa, Granny, and Pop.
Yeah.
So it is literally from his point of, like, his remembrance from his point of view.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
This is Buddy, and these characters are Ma and Pa.
Yeah.
This is, you know, his cousins and aunties have names, I think, and they're even the ones that you don't even know that they're cousins and aunties on the screen.
Yeah.
Buddy, yeah. So you get Buddy and you get Boy. Yeah, I do think Belfast, to a large extent, is Kenneth Branagh's childhood story.
Right.
I don't think it happened exactly as it is in there, but he did grow up in Belfast, and I think he did move to England at a young age because his father was working and things like that, and you know, and it's very sweet that the movie at the end of it is dedicated to the ones who stayed.
The ones who left and the ones who stayed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is quite sweet, because obviously, you know, it's a big decision either way in a situation like that. Whereas Boy, it's filmed, so it's set in the town that Taika Waititi grew up in.
I thought it was fictional.
No, it's set in Rokokore.
Okay.
In the Bay of Plenty in 1984.
Does he, yep.
Yeah, so it's set in the area. It's literally the house that is mainly set in, that they live in, that the cousins live in.
Yeah.
That's literally Taika Waititi's childhood home.
Oh, okay.
They just went and filmed in that house. So it's not, I want to clarify that I think Taika Waititi's mom might still be alive today.
I think it's just more of a snapshot of everybody's experience.
Yeah,
versus
yeah.
being like, here's my boy. It's not Honey Boy. It's not Meet the, I was going to say Feebles.
Fablemans.
Yeah, Fablemans.
It's not called Meet the Fablemans either. It's just called the Fablemans. Yeah, it's not, and I think that's the same for both. I don't think either of them are specifically supposed to be, this is my autobiography, you know?
Yeah.
But they're both very much like capturing the essence of what it was like to grow up in that place at that time.
Yeah.
They're both little kind of time capsules.
Time capsules, yeah.
And I do think Belfast was probably more influenced by Kenneth Branagh's lived experience than Boy is by Taika Waititi's.
Yeah.
But it's very much, you know, I think just getting the air of and the essence of what those places were like in that time period. Yeah, because I'm not going to say Taika Waititi's dad is the inspiration for this character, who is a terrible, you know, a real piece of work. But like you say, I mean, he's not a completely horrible person, and also like he you can see. Just watching the movie, you can understand how he ended up the way he is.
Yeah.
You know, it is very sympathetic towards that character, while still being like, hey, this isn't really how you should raise your kid. But yeah, so I think it's interesting that they've both kind of just gone back to their roots to be like, this is what this place was like. This is the atmosphere I grew up in.
It's interesting because there's a few scenes in Boy that sort of lend towards the concept that his father doesn't know how much damage he does by hurt, like how much hurt he's actually causing.
Yeah.
Famously, the saddest scene in the entire movie
mm-hmm.
is he's been drinking, they're in the car, and they hit Leaf. His pet goat.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what are you doing? Get back in the car. It's like, it was just a dog. Like, don't worry about it. And it's not until later when him and his brother go and find Leaf, and Leaf's literally, like, dying.
Yeah.
And that whole scene is really horrible because, like, Boy has nobody to talk to.
Yeah.
And though it's like he's a borderline pathological liar.
Yeah.
And talks so much smack.
Well, it's a defense mechanism.
Yeah. Because he is borderline living in this sort of weird fantasy. Yeah, it's that whole scene just like... I'd forgotten about it when we rewatched because this isn't... how many times have I seen Boy? Must be the fourth time. It's
obviously been a really long time since I saw Boy. Because I understood so much more of it culturally than I did the last time I saw it. I think, like, I'm genuinely not sure if I have seen it since I moved to New Zealand.
Fair enough.
Which is a weird, Surely I have. Maybe I've seen it once, but like a long while ago since I moved to New Zealand. One thing that I really noticed is that like all of the little bits of te reo Māori they're throwing at, I understood.
Yeah.
You know, that they talk about like, you know, the kuia and things like that or whatever. You know, like just like little bits and pieces that I'm like, oh, I know what, I know what that is. Because yeah, I think he said to him, I'm not ready to be a koro and things like, you know, and I would have had no idea what that meant. I mean, I think that in that case, contextually, I could pick up, you know, because he was saying, you know, don't get a girl pregnant because I'm not ready to be a koro. Yeah, there were so many little bits and pieces, just like, I was going to say a kupla fuckle for my Irish, for the Irish people out there. Because that's what we call it in Ireland. Because people, you know, most people in Ireland don't speak a lot of Irish.
Yeah.
But we have what we refer to as our cupola focal, which just means couple of words.
Yeah.
So it's like you can use, you know, every now and then use a word in a sentence, like say like slán to someone or whatever. And that's you using your cupola focal. And I find that over here, people do that more, that like, you know, people say kia ora or people, you know, will say bits and pieces of things and, maybe part of that is that I work in kind of a culture sector.
Yeah.
I am experiencing it more than I think the general population.
I think you'd get a very blank stare if you worked in like a very white corporate-y.
I've discovered it because I've gotten so used to like greeting and people in te reo Māori and like having like very small bits and pieces. Like I'm trying to learn to like I'm at a point where I can formulate some small sentences.
Well, you're doing better than me.
Yeah, but it's taken a while to get to that. You know, I've gotten so comfortable with like, you know, saying like kia ora, nō mai haere mai, things like that to people. That like we were at the like movie club thing we go to, and I said to someone "Ka kite anō" when they were leaving, and then they just kind of were like, "What?" And they had this moment where I was like, "Oh yeah, people don't just say that normally." It's like, yes, that is what like I would be looked at weirdly if I didn't say goodbye to people in te reo Māori. I think at work, it's much more expected. But like that, I'm working in a sector where people are trying to have some amount of te ao Māori. Literally today, I went to a mihi whakatau because we've just hired a kaihautū for the first time.
Right.
Because there wasn't one in the organization. Yeah. So they're really trying to like improve. And, you know, and people are listening to this who are not from New Zealand and have no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah. But it's, yeah. So it's interesting to watch this movie and like I felt very comfortable with the amount, the little bits and pieces of te reo Māori they were using, which I probably, when I watched it first, just went over my head.
It's also interesting because, you know, I think New Zealand's education system isn't doing enough, but in saying that, they're doing what they can when they're basically, you know, you could have the most outspoken, forward-thinking person in charge and still end up not being able to do any, make any significant changes.
Yeah.
Not making te reo Māori compulsory, te reo being language, Māori language compulsory in school like English is.
Yeah.
See,
in Ireland, Irish is compulsory.
Yeah.
And yet we don't
speak
it outside of school.
Yeah.
The majority of people, there are obviously areas of Ireland that are Gaeltacht regions where Irish is the first language.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
But like the fact that, you know, every government department has a Māori name, every, you know, like that sort of like forward progressiveness is very positive.
Yeah.
I just think someone needs to commit political suicide as a prime minister when they know they're not going to get re-elected, and just be like, call the minister of education, do it, pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You know, you have 4 years and then it's mandatory.
Yeah.
You have 4 years to get teachers up to state because that's all it would take.
Yeah.
All it would take with 4 years to get like primary school level, you know, going.
I think it'd be great.
And just be like, cool, if I never get re-elected and I have to go live in Fiji or whatever politicians do when they retire.
I genuinely think it'll happen.
It's just the damage was done so long ago when speaking to Te Reo Māori in school. Yeah, I know.
You're preaching to the choir.
I know, but you know, not everyone had the shared experiences that Ireland and New Zealand had.
Yeah.
It was banned. You would get detention. Like, it was really bad.
Yeah.
There are an entire generation of people of Māori descent who spoke Te Reo at home and then couldn't outside of their home. And because of that, there was a huge loss of the language.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you know, 800 years of oppression, as we like to say, our motto in Ireland.
I thought the motto was the problem is the Irish, the English don't remember and the Irish can't forget.
I thought you could say the motto was Chucky our law. Yeah.
Hardy, hardy, hey, hardy, hardy. Kill a fucking Englishman.
No, what I was going to say is that I genuinely think Te Reo Māori is going to be way more prevalent in our lifetimes.
I fucking hope so.
No, I'm not saying I hope so. I think it will be. Because I think that, like, the trajectory that it's on is so accelerated compared to what the Irish language did.
Yeah.
And I think that part of that is that maybe, I'm not like having an oppression battle here, but Ireland was oppressed for a longer time. There were, you know, because there was literally 800 years where it was illegal to speak Irish, illegal to share Irish stories and Irish culture and, you know, Irish music and things like that. And it was all done underground. And we now have a head start of about 100 years because really from 1921, I think we started. Yeah. And even before that, because the people who were rebelling against British rule were, you know, underground building up this knowledge of the Irish language and the Irish culture. And it is, I don't think they teach it well in schools in Ireland. And I think that's very sad. I think, because I work with someone here who's Irish and a slightly younger generation to me. Who has definitely got better Irish than I have. And part of me really hopes that's because they're starting to teach it better in schools and that future generations will actually get out and speak it. But it's very much, it's taught in a way in school that, like, you learn a handful of phrases that you're never going to use in real life. And you learn, like, you read poetry and stuff in Irish. And they teach it. It's just done stupidly, because they kind of teach it like they teach English.
Yeah, which is a big mistake.
Which is like they're teaching you to do reading comprehension and to whatever, but they're not teaching it like it's a foreign language.
Yeah.
And I understand not wanting to teach Irish like it's a foreign language because you don't want people to consider it a foreign language because it is, you know, our national language. But you need to really teach it from a very beginning baby level, you know, and it's compulsory in schools from the age of 4 to the age of 18, unless you have a learning disability or have lived outside of the country for 7 or more years.
Okay.
But those are the exceptions. And other than that, you learn Irish. And there are schools, there's Gael schools that will teach their whole curriculum in Irish. And I think that's good. And there's people who come out of those schools and are great at Irish, and there's also people who come out of those schools and never speak a word of Irish again in their
lives. Sorry, in my mind, Irish algebra popped into my head. Oh God, I could barely do algebra in English.
They try to incentivize it because the way the schooling system works is at the end of your 6th year in secondary school, you do the leaving certificates. You do this big like state exam where you do at least 6 subjects. Because your top 6 marks are counted and anything other than that is irrelevant. So some of us try to do like 9 subjects to hedge our bets. So you do at least 6 subjects at this level. And they have, since I did it, they've incentivized doing honors level maths because you now get an extra 25 points. Because you get up to 100 points in each subject, but now you can get an extra 25 points for doing a higher level maths. But you also get extra points if you do all of your exams in Irish.
That's madness.
Which is insane, because, I mean, it does mean you could be doing, like, a French exam. You did your German exam, and the questions that you normally would answer in English, you're answering in Irish. Or, like, some of the questions are written in Irish and some of them are in German.
Nope, I dropped my phone.
But it's an interesting concept. But they do try to incentivize it. So they're like, hey, if you get really good at Irish and do your whole exam in Irish, then you get all these extra points and then you have a better chance of getting into college and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So they're trying, but I think there's better ways to do it. And I've been out of the country for a while and I've been out of the education system for longer. And it's entirely possible that nowadays they are doing better at teaching it in schools. But when I was there, it was not taught in a way that you could take away from it afterwards. And to some extent, I would love to properly learn Irish and be able to fluently speak Irish. But also, what would I do with it here in New Zealand? You know? So instead, I'm doing my best to learn Te Reo Māori. So that I can have some semblance of conversations. And it's working. You know, I'm at a level where I'm starting to understand grammar, which is a huge achievement, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because up to this point, I did not know anything. I was picking up words here and there, but I didn't understand how to actually make a sentence. And now I can do that. And not very many of them, but I can do it. And I think, you know, I think New Zealand is headed in the right direction. And I think that the level to which people generally, and I know I am speaking from someone, you know, in the culture sector where there are going to be more people interested in Te Reo Māori, and like tikanga and things. But overall, I do think in the general zeitgeist in New Zealand, people are using little bits and pieces. They're cupola focal, if you will, of Te Reo Māori. There needs to be a Te Reo Māori equivalent of that. I'll ask my teacher. because, I mean, it's a great phrase to have, to be able to say just like a couple of words. But I think that, like I said, I think way more people in New Zealand can confidently speak even little bits and pieces of Te Reo Māori than Ireland.
It's not even just the being able to speak it. It's just the concept that it is borderline normal, rather than sort of something that, you know, someone said morena instead of morning.
Yeah.
It's not like a
Yeah, I mean, I do it when I get on the bus. Yeah. I always say, you know, I always say kia ora and morena to the bus driver. I don't say aku mihi when I'm getting off the bus. Maybe I should be like, na mihi nui. I just go, thanks driver, in proper Kiwi fashion. But maybe I should normalize. Maybe I should start that. I don't think people would think I was insane. But I do say kia ora or morena to drivers getting on the bus, and they often will say it back to me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's normal. That's, people don't bat an eye at that. I do work in a place where we get a lot of people who are not from New Zealand who can get very confused when you speak to them in Te Reo Māori. Some of them will be like, what does that mean? Some will be like, oh, can you explain this, this, and this? And I'm now at a point where I can confidently actually answer those questions. Because I had one, like, someone asked me when I first started working there, like very early on, someone pointed a sign that said like, nah, something. And they were like, what does that mean? And I was like, I don't know. It just means the. It's the plural of the. Because nouns don't have plurals and singulars in Te Reo Māori.
Yeah.
You got to put like a te or na before it, so you know if it's a, or put a ma at the end of it to make it a plural. Plurals don't exist. Do you know tamariki? People use tamariki as plural all the time. That's a singular. That's just a noun, tamariki. It's just child. It's only if you say na tamariki, then it's like the children, or tamariki ma. It's just children. if you just say tamariki, it's just child, and people use it incorrectly constantly.
Yeah, it's, I guess, it's, I do agree with you that it is incorrect, but isn't it better that people just use a word?
Yeah, definitely.
Even
if
that's sort of the actual meaning of it is incorrect. There's,
by the way, I came up with the Te Reo Māori for something. Not like I invented it, but like someone someone was looking for. I must go and see if they've put it on the sign. Someone was looking to change a sign with some prices on it. I'm not going to say where, in case people can connect me to it. It's not my workplace. It's a different place. But someone was looking to change a sign, and they wanted to know what would be the best way to say, I think that children's tickets are free. And this person was in my Te Reo Māori class, and we had a discussion about it, and I found an option like through the Te Ake Māori dictionary online that I was like, oh, maybe this would work. And the Te Reo Māori teacher was like, oh yeah, actually, that's a great way to do it. And they were like, great, we'll bring that to like our team to do it. And I must, next time I go past there, I must check to see if they've put it on the sign and be like,
I don't know.
I came up with that Te Reo Māori phrase. Anyway, we've gotten way off.
I think being it's that anniversary episode, being that these movies are very similar and very different at the same time,
and that we're talking about Irish culture and Maori culture.
I think we're actually perfectly on subject.
Yeah.
You know, this is a movie podcast, but the reality is. If you just wanted a rundown of the movie, you could just put text-to-speech on and get the synopsis written out to you. We have done episodes that was kind of borderline like that in the past.
Yeah, well, we did one episode that was literally that, and then that was when we were like, we're re-recording this.
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into some trivia and some fun tragic facts there?
Oh, tragic facts. Okay. Yeah, we can get into a little bit of trivia. So Belfast. So one of the things that I thought was interesting was, well, actually, I'll go with this other one first, which is that it's a film set. The whole street that they have there was built as a film set. It was built on a disused airfield in Hampshire. Because all of the major studios in England were busy with other projects. So Kenneth Branagh was like, we can't shoot it in a studio. Let's go build a street on an airfield.
Makes sense.
The other thing I was going to say was that to capture moments of spontaneity, Kenneth Branagh kept telling Jude Hill that they were like doing rehearsals and would just like film the rehearsals, and most of the shots that have ended up in the film were Jude Hill thinking he was doing rehearsals, which I think is kind of sweet. So they would, but like he was like starting to suspect it, so they had to put tape over the lights on the cameras that show that they're recording, so that Jude Hill wouldn't know that he's being recorded in his rehearsal. This was a fact that I thought was actually, maybe I'll leave that one to the last of these ones. I'll circle back to it. So Jude Hill was 9 when he was cast. They had done like an open audition and 300 actors auditioned for it.
Jesus.
And so he was cast out of 300 young actors, and he was 9 when he was cast and 10 when they did filming and 11 when the premiere came out. Also, Kenneth Branagh's family moved to Reading in Berkshire in 1969 when he was 9. And that was how they escaped the troubles. Yeah, in real life, he has a brother who's 5 years older than him and a sister who's 10 years younger than him.
Wow.
It says here the violence that that is depicted in the film continued for almost 30 years after the time of this film, which if you know anything about the history of Northern Ireland,
I was gonna say the IRA.
Well, it's not the IRA. It's not just the IRA.
True.
Anyway, so the last little bit of trivia about Belfast, because I thought this was interesting, was for this film, Kenneth Branagh became the 10th actor to win an Oscar for screenwriting. And the reason I thought it was interesting is because when I looked at it on IMDb, there was a list of the other 9 actors, and number 8 was Taika Waititi for Jojo Rabbit.
Interesting.
So they're both in the first 10 actors to win screenwriting Oscars. So I thought that was cool. For Boy, I mentioned that it's filmed in the town that Taika Waititi grew up in, and it's filmed in the house he grew up in. Oh, also the school that they film in is the school he went to school in.
Interesting.
Yeah. He had originally cast, so I think the majority of the cast, especially the kids, are just people who lived in that town.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want it to be like some
film set thing.
Well, he didn't want it to be some posh kids from Auckland who'd been to film school coming down and, pretending to be, you know, a little boy from the area,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
He wanted it to have some element of realism to it. But the boy that he had cast as the lead, they only realized with less than a week from filming start that it wasn't going to work out, that the kid wasn't cutting it and as the boy. And James Rolleston was an extra on set. And they were like, you. And got him in. And he is like, he's fantastic. He's so good in it. Like, what a perfect cast for that child, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that worked out really well. But yeah, so he literally was cast 3 days before filming started.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. He just put in the lead role. I don't think I took down any details about the other kid, the kid who played Rocky, but I read up on him and he didn't really do anything else afterwards. And apparently, like, he was just really shy and stuff. And so, like, a lot of, like, Rocky's mannerisms are just how that kid was. And he was, like, nervous to do it. He decided, like, on the day he didn't want to do it anymore. And then they were like, no, come on, let's just try it. And then he's okay. And he's so sweet as Rocky.
Because have you seen, Have you seen The Deadlands?
No, I haven't seen The Deadlands.
So that was like the big thing afterwards. I don't know what The Dark Horse is.
Okay.
A drama film. Oh, it's starring Cliff Curtis. Okay.
Is this James Rolleson's acting?
Yeah,
because I want to talk about James Rolleson a little bit.
Yeah.
Because something that I had heard at the time, or around the time it happened, and I think a lot of people heard it, was that he was in a very serious driving accident.
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, in 2016. So he was charged with dangerous driving. 2016, I think, was he 17 years old? I can't remember what year he was born.
97.
Yeah, so 19.
Yeah.
So he's 19 years old. Or maybe 18 or 19 years old. And he, yeah, they crashed into a bridge in Opotiki.
Yeah.
And he was seriously injured, and he had injuries to his lower body and to his brain. He had a pretty significant brain injury. He had to essentially relearn how to walk, how to speak, how to use basic motor skills. And that was, you know, that was something I knew about him. And I remember being really upset that, you know, the boy from Boy had gone through all this. And then when he was in The Breaker Upper, I was like amazed.
Yeah.
And he's so good in it. And he, you know, and he's definitely obviously been through a lot of rehabilitation. I think he's been quite open about, you know, what rehabilitation was like. So it's really good to see that he's doing well again.
Yeah.
So I think that was pretty frightening.
He's, for those who haven't seen it, which I don't know how well it did and what the international audience was like, but his portrayal as the older brother in Uproar was also fantastic.
Or I haven't seen that either.
Uproar?
Oh, Uproar. Oh, yeah, sorry.
I was like, we were at the movies together. What are you on about? I haven't seen
it. I don't know. I think it's something else. My brain is fried. Yes, Uproar. That's more recent. It's even more recent.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very good in that.
Which is ironic because, like, the next movie that Taika Waititi did was Hunt for the Wilder People.
Was that? That wasn't the next movie. No, the next movie he did after Boy was What We Do in the Shadows.
He's not the thing for that.
He's not the what for that?
He's not the writer. I think he's the director, but he's not the writer for it.
He was. What We Do in the Shadows. He even wrote the short film in 2004.
Oh, okay. So, you're right.
Yeah, I know I'm right. I didn't think I was wrong.
2016. 2016 at Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah, the same year that James Rolleston was in the accident.
Yeah. with Julian Dennison, and then Julian Dennison's in Uproar with James, and that's how you get the 6 degrees of Taika Waititi.
I mean, also Taika Waititi's in both Boy and. He's not in Uproar.
No, I absolutely love him as the priest in.
In Hunt for the Wilder People. Yeah, if you guys haven't seen Hunt for the Wilder People, I definitely recommend it. Yeah. It's a very fun movie. Yeah, so what else was around here?
And Meet the Feebles and Frighteners and,
just watch a whole lot of New Zealand movies.
Lovely Bones. It was
Housebound.
Oh, my God.
Which I think we also mentioned recently.
Yeah.
On our Disturbia episode because it's similar to Disturbia. There's a lot of great New Zealand movies.
Have you heard of Lord of
the Rings? Have you heard of a little trilogy?
Have you heard of Avatar? To call it.
No, not Avatar.
It's a New Zealand made film.
No, I'm saying I don't want to recommend. Jimmy Cam. I do not recommend Avatar. Anyway.
Whaling is bad, didn't you?
So one of the other things I had here was that to distribute the film in the United States.
Which one?
Boy. We're still on Boy.
Yeah.
Taika Waititi raised $110,000 via Kickstarter. And at the time, it was the most prominent example of crowdfunding in New Zealand. And that was how they got an international audience and box office for Boy. And the only other thing I had in here was about Boy A, which is a song that was originally released in 1984. So it fits in with the time period of the film. But their end credits is them
doing it to Thriller.
Doing it, singing and dancing to Poirier, but in the Thriller outfits. It re-entered the New Zealand charts and it reached number 3 in May 2010. So it's the only New Zealand song to chart over 3 different decades.
Nice.
Yeah. Because it was
for those who don't know what we're talking about, please now watch it on YouTube. It's fantastic.
And, definitely.
Very circular because also has like there was a weird period of time, and I say weird, but like it's now an Olympic sport.
Mm-hmm.
So fuck the haters.
Breaking.
Yeah. Just disappeared for like ages.
Yeah.
And then came back, like, super hard.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's an Olympic sport.
Do you know what's funny? Have you, like, looked at the people who are representing their countries in the Olympics from breakdancing?
I saw a couple of interviews with them on BBC.
They're, like, the vast majority of people that in that particular sport are, like, our age group.
Yeah.
Because it's so funny to me that, like, most Olympic sports, you have to be like teenager, early 20s to be in your prime. And then when you're 24, you're retired for life because an old fogey.
Because you're crippled permanently from all the damage you've done for the years literally. Of training.
Yes, I know someone who didn't even manage to get into the Olympics and that is their life story. It's so funny to me that the breakdancing, like that this is the first year it's been in the Olympics. And, like, it's all people in their mid-30s or older, pretty much. I mean, I think there's a few younger people, but, like, the mean age is, like, 36 or something. That there's, like... Because then it's, like, what these people were just doing it for fun, I guess, before now. You know, or, like, doing it in, like, local competitions and things. And then, you know, now they get to go to the Olympics. Because the other thing I've seen is that, like, any of them that I've seen any interviews with, they're just, like, amazed that they get to be at the Olympics. They're like, wow, what's happening?
This, it's interesting because it's very, like, because it's kind of weird, right? I will admit it, like, having breaking as an Olympic sport is kind of weird. But at the same time,
it's not that weird.
Dressage is it.
Yeah.
And that's just making a horse dance. What's, like, mat work in gymnastics? That's basically the same thing.
Well, I was going to say...
a bouncy floor and more flips.
There's
like,
someone... I can't remember... I think... Was she American? I don't remember. There's someone who's in the breakdancing competition who was a gymnast and then had, like, a significant knee injury and could never do gymnastics again.
Yeah.
And, like, her dream had been to go to the Olympics in gymnastics and then it was shattered.
Yeah.
And then
like
she
her
just
knee.
Like her knee. And then she just took up breakdancing, you know, to have something to do. And now she's like, I literally never thought I'd make it to the Olympics, and here I am.
Yeah.
You know, especially after my injury. But
Turkey funny. Just seems a retired hitman.
Not for breakdancing, I don't think.
No, for shooting.
That would be funny if they sent a hitman to do breakdancing.
There's for those who don't know, there are some weird sports that are no longer in the Olympics, which I think is a shame. I would really like to see an Olympic tug of war team, because tug of war was an Olympic sport. Mm. So is curling.
Yeah. Why, that's what I was
not
thinking.
Not curling. The one with croquet.
Oh, I was thinking of curling.
Curling is Winter Olympics.
Yeah. Because that's what I, when you were talking about like the weird sports, I was 100% thinking about curling.
Yeah.
Which is odd. Anyway.
Thank you for listening to our 80th episode.
Yeah. Thanks for sticking with us for 3 years if you've listened to us from
and
the beginning.
If you haven't, you've got a bunch of content to absorb. If you want to send us weird memes, we have a Discord.
Yep.
Feel free to join it. We have a newsletter that's available on our website.
That's true.
We have a website. It's ittakes2.co.nz.
Absolutely.
And we're on other social medias. And if you go to our feed on our website, you can find it. Where else you can find us?
Yep. I'm in the show notes on pretty much every podcatcher. We'll have
some links
to some places you can find us.
Well, I hope you are safe out there in this world of trying times, and your episodes last 80 plus.
What? Okay. I don't know what you mean, but okay.
Like a TV show. Like every day is a new episode. And I
hope okay. Nick's lost it, but thank you for sticking with us. Goodbye.
Bye.